Welcome to the DNA Talks podcast, where we take on the mission of unlocking the code of your genetics. This season is all about you, upgrading your health, not just on the surface, but down to the root cause. Join us as your clinicians at the DNA Company investigate your DNA and beyond. The intention of this podcast is to enhance your lifestyle by changing what is in your control. This does not substitute the medical advice given by your personal doctor, therapist, and other healthcare professionals.
Bonjour, my name is Krista. You know me as the Chief Science Officer here at the DNA Company. And today I have the lovely, delightful pleasure of speaking to Betty Murray. So I don't want to rob our audience of your own introduction. I'd love it if you could make it, because you're quite a woman of many talents and trades. And so I'd love if you could just offer our audience here today some insight into who you are.
Okay, so I'm a clinical nutritionist and certified functional medicine practitioner through the Institute for Functional Medicine, and I'm also a PhD researcher, and I spent most of my PhD research looking at women's hormone metabolism, the microbiome, and you know, and have been in this clinical space for 20 years.
Yeah, which elates me to have this conversation with you today, because I think as we look at various clinical avenues, one of the more underspoken, underrepresented things that we look at is women's health, right? Because I think for the longest time, the mantra was in medicine was, if a woman is having issues, let's give her the pill and pray to God. And so I'd love to understand how you got into that space and how you're starting to tease apart and really offer solutions and hearing people, but also offer solutions that are beyond kind of, here's this pill and good luck.
Yeah, so you know, I think most people that came into the functional medicine, alternative, integrative field, they themselves or somebody in their family got sick. They've used all their conventional tools, and then they found out that the toolbox was woefully inept. Yeah. And yeah. I actually had a business degree. I was in IT, had digestive problems as a kid that were episodic.
Sure.
And so to add a little complexity to this, I was also raised Christian Scientist. So I'd never been to a doctor until I was 18. I know, just go.
That is a flip.
That is a flip.
Mentality.
So here's where it gets a little more interesting. My dad had his first heart attack at 42 when I was 6 years old while we were camping in New Jersey. So I had this really weird experience of watching the conventional medicine system, because we went to the hospital. He had, you know, he went through quadruple bypass shortly after that in the 70s. And so I would participate in it, but I didn't see a doctor when I got sick.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated with it, because I kept saying, well, if we have the access to this intelligence, when are you supposed to use it, not use it? So I was, I was too much of a question asking child. Yeah. So,
or just enough.
Just enough. My parents didn't really love it.
Sure.
But so my episodic digestive stuff was kind of like, you know, I was a kid of the 70s. So unless you were like dying, they would just like brush it off and go on.
Yeah.
But when I got into college, it got a little more pronounced, and then a little bit older, and I got into IT where I was working 80 to 100 hours a week. I was the first female hired into the company to answer to the CTO. So I worked with all men. I was the first female to hire another female, and I had to fight for that. And I got sick, and it went downhill really quick. And I ended up being diagnosed with colitis.
Yeah.
And so when I asked the doctor, hey, is there something I could do with my diet that would affect this digestive autoimmune condition?
And when was this? Like time, Marcus?
I was 28, 29.
Yeah. Okay. So back at a time when asking a doctor about diet and nutrition, they're just going to kind of blank stare and say, it doesn't matter. Continue on.
Yeah, continue on. No, he was an overweight, middle-aged man. And he barked this gigantic laugh in my face and said, it has nothing to do with nutrition.
Yeah.
So I, of course, had some choice words. And I just decided in my head, I was like, I'm going to go back and take some nutrition classes. Yeah. And I'd already been doing yoga and other stuff. So I went back to take nutrition classes. And that's when it clicked. I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So I doubled down, went back, and got my master's while I still worked in corporate America. Went out and started working with patients. And then in 2006, I opened one of the first multi-specialty, multidisciplinary clinic in Dallas that was really designed to do the functional medicine model.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of bravado.
And, but interestingly, what I'm hearing is such a, unfortunately, a common story amongst women was, I recognized this gap in healthcare. I wasn't being heard. I was not necessarily dismissed, right? The doctor was willing to see you, but couldn't hear it all, couldn't see it all. And so you fixed it for yourself.
Yes. I mean, the statistics are pretty bad about gaslighting in medicine. Just Google that and you'll see it. It's just, it's just very common. And so, you know, I think some people don't realize that up until the late 90s, women were intentionally excluded from studies. So most of the pre-existing medications and other things have never been studied on women.
And we were prescribed as if we were mini men.
Exactly, exactly. You know, and so how I got involved in hormones, and I went back for a PhD at 48.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's like, why did you do that? It's because I wanted to understand the research and I wanted to dive in. Yeah. That was because my 40s were so bad.
Yeah.
You know, I just did not go through perimenopause well. And I had reached out to my functional medicine world, and there just was a lot of unanswered questions that didn't help me. Yeah. So that's why I did it. It's not because that I wanted another $250,000 worth of debt and 5 more years in school.
Yeah. No, I hear it. And I would also offer too, in general, I think there's this idea that as you age, you shouldn't be doing things like that. And I would offer your life experience and your wisdom to that point better informs that academic research.
Oh,
so just selfishly, personally, thank you for doing that, because I think there needs to be this shift in the way that we approach academics and offering healthcare to the world that includes people as they get older, because you come with experience and wisdom that others don't have.
Yeah, so, certainly, you know, because now I'm going to be 54 in a week.
54 and glorious, and I love it.
That's 100%. Yeah. And, you know, and I've really got a community of women going through menopause. I see this as the second season of life.
Yeah.
And statistically, women leave their biggest impact over 50. Martha Stewart, lover or hater, she didn't start her business until 50, right? So this is the time that we actually have the energy, the money, the opportunity to do those things. So when women are challenged to try and figure that out or feel like it's too late, I'm like, nah, it's just right time. Do it.
Exactly. I hear you. And that is what has birthed this beautiful clinic. So talk to me about some of the work that you do within your clinic, namely, and again, selfishly, the genomic component.
Right.
How that has informed things.
Yeah. So I'm adopted. So I don't know anything about my own genetics. So as soon as genetics became commercially available.
Yeah.
That was really where I, you know, selfishly, I was like, I'd like to know what my disease risks are. I can't find that in my history.
Yeah.
So I started doing genetics when it was first commercially available with a particular company that's no longer around. And, you know, what I found was as more companies became more available, and we were using it within our clinic with our MDs and nurse practitioners, you know, there was always this gap. Right. And so you then go to the next company that comes along and the next company that comes along. And the gaps that I saw and still see for most of the commercially available tests is they act like these genes work and they like discriminate and they're the only ones present. And that's the only one you need to pay attention to, and that they're not in a pathway.
Yeah.
And so I was like, that's biochemically incorrect and very, very short-sighted. And so I found myself taking the genetic results from the labs and then taking different tests like organic acids and lab work and then laying them out and starting to build my own map of what these pathways were doing.
Yeah.
So when I came to the DNA company, I was like, oh, wow, you know, this company thought through this and said, we're going to do pathway identification. We're also only going to report to the report the genes that actually have really solid research data you can manipulate. Because it's the other thing. If you get a bunch of genetic data that doesn't have good clinical data to say what to do, then you're just getting noise.
Yeah.
It's signal noise. And then people assign issues to things we don't actually know. And it's scientifically inaccurate.
Yeah. I like that concept of noise. Because I think a question that comes across my desk quite often is, well, why don't you do everything? How come there's still only so few genes here compared to other clinical offerings where you can see everything and then the salt shaker, right?
Yeah.
It's really the question has to become what meaningfully adds to clinical care.
Right.
If you have one SNP and I have the opposite SNP, does that change what we do? And it should, or else why on earth do you care?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's too much noise in the industry in a lot of cases. And then what happens is you're giving clinical recommendations that aren't really based in science and may counterbalance what you're really trying to do.
Yeah.
So I was very happy to see the DNA company do that process so I didn't have to do the mental gymnastics. Yeah. And it made it easier for me to teach, you know, because I am always adding new clinicians to my clinic and my telemedicine, you know, aspects. And it's hard to teach somebody something when there's not a very clear path.
I offer compassionate awareness to the fact that, like, as a clinician, you know, you, there's so much development within science on a daily basis, and it's very difficult to keep up with it, right? Like, praise the AI gods that they're going to be helping us with this, but to jump into something as big as genetics and understand what to do with it, that's a very clinically intimidating space to get into because there's so much, and you feel like you're going back to school for a PhD, which isn't reasonable if you're trying to maintain clinical practice.
Right.
And so to have intelligent sources that can discern down, here's what's important, keep up with that, keep up with the research, that's our job, right? Keeping
right.
up with the research. And then offering that in an accessible way that not only the clinician can understand it in terms, right? They're not going to look like an idiot of like talking to something they don't understand, but also talking through the application and the analogies and how do you talk to your patients about it,
right?
Right? Because it's for patients too, it's a scary thing. There's still this association that genes are associated exclusively with disease.
Right.
And so demystifying that and saying, no, your genes can actually curate how your hormones flow through. And now that we know that, we know how to better support you with your hormonal pathways.
Right, right. Yeah, because people struggle with, you know, you have the genes that are determinant, right? So if you carry cystic fibrosis and those kind of things, you have the risk profile genes like a BRCA gene.
Yep.
Then you have the genes that we're talking about here, which are the SNPs and the paragraph deletions and subtractions that inform the impact of your epigenetics, which is where you're really going to have the biggest bang for your buck with lifestyle, nutrition, and diet.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And coupled with a lot of the work that your clinic does, right? Because I think it's very short-sighted to assume you can do your genes and that you're this person that lives in a bubble and that's the only thing impacting it, right? Like there are very few bubble people in the world. I don't know if there's any bubble people in the world, but that further clinical intake and that awareness of how biome, for example, lifestyle, for example, all of that influences the expression and the joie de vivre that one can derive from their genome.
Yes, absolutely. No, I agree. I agree completely.
No, and I approach you so humbly and gratefully that you're within this space and offering it in particular to women where, you know, I think of, I had a dear friend of mine who was recently diagnosed with endometriosis. And when you go through that, you know, when they talk in particular with their doctor, the treatment for endometriosis has not changed since the 60s. How?
Not surprising.
That's not okay. And it's in part because we're only now caring about it, but also just because it's shocking. So thank you for the energy and effort that you're offering to this space. It's so important.
Thank you.
So needed.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I always found confusing, I wouldn't say confusing, frustrating, was, you know, as a woman enters into menopause, their risk for, let's say, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, go up.
Yep.
Right? It was this concept that the hormones that are great for you when you're in your 20s and you're fertile, that there's this magical end date at 50 and now you're going to die from them, right? Yeah. Like you can't have them.
Or cardiovascular,
all those things. So all of a sudden, that estradiol is really dangerous. I was like, that defies logic because the natural progression is we wouldn't live very far past 50 and that we wouldn't be far past fertility, but the loss of those hormones does not equate to all of a sudden increased risk. And so what really drove me, that's why I sort of went back to school to dig through this, was what is that risk then?
Yeah.
Because we have the estrogen receptors and the progesterone receptors in HER2.
Yep.
So it must be something else. And that really is those hormone metabolism pathways. And we've uncovered a lot, but we have a long way to go because it's not just not logical, right? If somebody tells you something that is not logical in science, math, physics, it's probably not right. It defies logic.
which to an extent, it's funny, you know, we talk about, you know, science is like, oh, here's this one gene, let's explore it singularly. It's that reductionism that sits within science and this, you know, almost this religification. I don't know if that's a word. It is a word now. This religification of science insofar as it is this set in stone thing and let us not touch it, let us not disturb it, let us not think about it.
Right.
And it's a beautiful new era, I think, of science and medicine that we're getting into. We're not only educating our patients, here are your hormone pathways, here's how to support them, but encouraging questions and encouraging that inquiry and encouraging them to say, this doesn't make sense. Help me make it sense, or let's investigate other.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
So true.
I'm very grateful for the more educated practitioners in the space who are willing to jump into that mystery, but with a firm clinical background, firm clinical grounding.
Yeah. I mean, I spent a significant portion of my PhD, obviously, in the how do you create methodology that is sound, right? And so you know, science always gets down to that reductionist. Well, I only want to look at one variable because that way the math is easy. But I'm like, that's not how the human body works. We have to be able to become more sophisticated, and AI and machine learning and all those things are going to help us do that.
Yes.
Yeah. But until we can get over that dogma, the entire American and human population across the world is going to suffer, much like we are today.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful for the pioneers like yourself that are helping us shift that conversation. I know we're coming to a close of our time, but what I would love to do is invite you back at some point in time. I think we at the DNA Company are starting up a very nerdy stream, specifically for the nerds and the clinicians out there. So I'd love at a different point in time to kind of jump deeper into the beautiful, the majesty of biochemistry and the majesty of how do we approach hormones from this larger systemic level, as opposed to this reduced thing of here, toss some estradiol on and you're good to go.
Yes, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, I'd love to. Wonderful. Betty, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for having me. I love it.
Au revoir.